On the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome into our last Brewers Weekly of the regular season. Yeah, playoffs start Tuesday night. We'll have no idea who the Brewers are playing by Monday afternoon. It is going to be wacky, to say the least. If you're watching on YouTube, remember, we share all these clips, and you may see it on social media as well. I'm rocking the Kelly Green tonight. I'm wearing the Oakland A's best jersey in baseball, Kelly Green, Oakland. I'll have my final segment talking about the city of Oakland, the Coliseum, as we said goodbye to the Coliseum today. Some audio I want you to hear. My personal connection, of course, to the A's. We talked about that when the Brewers were there in the East Bay last month, but today we put a bow on all of it and say goodbye to the Coliseum for now. The Brewers get the win today over the Pirates. And I don't want to lament too long on today's win, but a fun couple of nuggets that come out of today's win, 5-2. Devin gets another save. Aaron Civale was fantastic. And the Brewers offense once again got the job done without hitting a home run. A bunch of doubles matched their season high with 5 doubles in a game. The two nuggets that really jump out to me, with a win today, the Brewers clinch that for the rest of the season, there's only 3 games left, that means they will be the only team without a 4-game losing streak. There's only 3 games left, and they won today. That's pretty darn cool. Second, the Brewers won the season series against all 4 opponents in the National League Central with today's win. And you may be thinking, well, yeah, of course, they won the division, Dom. That's what they're supposed to do. Well, you look at the Baltimore Orioles. The Baltimore Orioles won the season series against every opponent in the AL East. They're not winning the division. You look at other teams, they have like one, like the Guardians, they clinched, but they actually only won 8 games against the Chicago White Sox. Like, things get weird sometimes in your division. And for the folks that say, oh, well, the Central's weak, you know, whatever, good for the Brewers, but the Central's a weak division. Well, They did what they were supposed to. They won all of the series against their division, the teams that you play more often than anybody else. And, oh, by the way, they have an above 500 interleague record. It's what they've struggled with the West more than they've struggled with division or interleague. The point is, if somebody wants to bring down the Central, despite the Brewers having won all of those series, it's like, well, what are they supposed to do? What happens if they win the Central and not win the season series against, like, the Cardinals or the Cubs? How do you feel then? Is that a disappointment because the Cubs couldn't get the season series? Like, the Reds have such weird series wins this year, but they really struggled against the division. What I see is people trying to bring down the Central because it's not the Cubs or the Cardinals winning it. If the Cubs or the Cardinals won this division, you know what they would be saying. Oh, you know, a savvy team like the Brewers are always tough to beat. And then you beat the Cubs or you beat the Cardinals. And look at Paul Skeens. They would give every possible moment to give that team flowers. Whereas when the Brewers win the Central, it's like, you know, it was a weak division. Cubs didn't play well. Cardinals, no, forget that. So those are the cool nuggets that I pull away from today's win over the Pirates. Now, the Pirates have pieces. We talked about it in yesterday's postgame show with Craig Kishon. The thought that, okay, Paul Skeens is going to be in this division for a long time. He's probably going to be the NL Rookie of the Year. You've still got Brian Reynolds under control. Ke'Bryan Hayes will hopefully be back healthy next season for their sake. O'Neill Cruz, he did not have his best series. He looked pretty checked out today. Not going to lie. I think he would tell you the same. Made a base running blunder. Made a fielding blunder. He's a freak athlete. He puts it together. Who knows? And then furthermore, behind Skeens, you've still got Holderman. You've still got Majinski. You've still got Bednar, you've still got Keller, who pitched pretty well today, despite the line. There are pieces there. So they're not that far off. The rest of the division isn't that far off, too, quite frankly. So we'll see what the final weekend has in store for them. We've already seen one managerial change here in the division with the Reds firing David Bell. I wonder what the Pirates feel about Derek Shelton. I wonder what the Cardinals feel about Oliver Marmol. I don't think he's going anywhere either. We know how the Cubs feel about Craig Counsell. But nonetheless, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. That is the phone number. We'll talk more about Aaron Civale. I have a rotation segment plan for what the postseason can look like. We're also going to talk about the to-do list I talked about a month ago on this show. How did the Brewers do for this final month of the season when it comes to the to-do list of what I asked? There are six things on this list. Then the scenarios. We'll talk about the doubleheader on Monday, what all of it means, what the Diamondbacks have to do, what the Mets have to do, and what the Braves have to do. We'll also get those pitching thoughts and then finally say goodbye to Oakland. So we're just getting started. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. Stay with us here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. Less so much about the game today. We'll talk about Savali later. A couple of texts. This one from the 262. Do we got a location for the start of that riot if Bryce Tarang doesn't win the gold and platinum glove? That was a funny tweet today from the Brewers official Twitter account. But the platinum glove is going to be tough. There tends to be a bias toward catchers on that. The gold glove, I'm ready. Like, do we need to go? Where's Rawlings headquartered? I think of Louisville's slugger in Louisville. I forget where Rawlings is headquartered. But nonetheless, like, come on. It's so clear. I was having a conversation with Pat Murphy earlier this week about that. As they prepare to go through the gold glove voting, there's a whole minutia to it and everything. And all the coaches and everybody are presented with the stats in front of them. The stats look really, really good on Bryce Tarang. He made another incredible play today for the Brewers in their victory 5-2. He leads all defenders, regardless of position, in defensive runs saved, which is a very important statistic when it comes to how you are viewed for the gold glove and for the platinum glove. So, good question there. This one, David in Superior, would sure like to face the Mets or the Braves after their doubleheader on Monday. How do these teams compare, and who do you think would be the better matchup for the Brewers? Seeing the Mets will have just seen us over the weekend. And I can confirm the Mets are on the ground here. They arrived earlier this afternoon. In fact, I just bumped into former Brewer Eddie Alvarez out here on 3rd Street Market Hall. So shout out to Eddie. Congratulations on your success being back in the big leagues. Former Olympian, of course. Eddie's a great dude. Anyway, that stuff, the matchups, that'll all be in the scenario segment a little bit later on here in the program. Right now we're checking on the to-do list. And if you want to get a text in or a question in, 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. Here was the to-do list that I had, the six items back in August with 26 games to go. Here are the six things that I laid out. Number one, figure out who is going to be your leverage bullpen and who is going to be your bridge bullpen. Number two, audition your starters. Figure out who is going to be a starter in the postseason. Guys like Freddy Peralta, who had just come off six shutout innings that night or that day against the Giants. Guys like Frankie Montas were starting to hit his groove. Aaron Civale was hitting his groove. Colin Ray was still firmly in the picture at this point. But we said, audition your starters. They went to a six-man rotation briefly, figuring out what they wanted there. Number three, speaking of that six-man rotation, figure out what you want to do with DL Hall. Is he going to be a starter, or is he going to be a reliever for this year? Down the road, he can be a starter, but what is he going to be for this final month plus of the year? Number four, try to keep William going. Using the three-catcher setup to your advantage, give William days when he needs it. We'll talk about that in a moment. Number five, can you find a way to keep Jake Bowers fresh? Because I don't know if you paid attention or not, the Brewers are actually 25 games above 500 in games that Jake Bowers starts. There's a multitude of ways he impacts the game. I know some folks see his batting average and immediately light their torches. He's a really good defender at first base. He gives you a tough at-bat. He can draw a walk. He's valuable off the bench as a pinch hitter. But yesterday, hitting a home run, that was useful. Brewers obviously lost the game. Reminder that the Brewers just have a serious lack of lefty pop right now. And he hasn't necessarily been hitting a ton of homers, but he is super helpful when it comes to balancing the lineup and figuring out how an opposing manager could try to solve the riddle. And then if they bring in a leverage lefty like they did today to face Jake Bowers, you can go to a righty on your bench. Today it happened to be Rhys Hoskins. I don't think that would be the case in the postseason. Anyway, and then the last thing, speaking of Rhys, to talk about was get Rhys Hoskins going. I think we've got to that. So let's start there. Let's start with some of these offensive stuff. Then we'll get to the pitching in the next segment. Did the Brewers get Rhys going here in the month of September? I'd argue yes. He's swinging the bat a little bit better right now. He's still striking out a little bit too much for my liking, in his liking as well. But here are the numbers. In August, it was a low. A 189 average in the month of August. Only a 604 OPS. He had 29 strikeouts and only 9 walks for the entire month of August. Well, here in September, with 3 more games to go still, he's hitting .230. That may not sound extravagant, but for a guy like him who's a bona fide slugger, he's there to hit homers. He's not there to hit for average. It's an improvement up, obviously, 30 points, or 40 points, rather, from what it was in the month of August. And his OPS went up by 170 points from last month to this month, just in those individual splits. So that's good news that he's getting going. The big thing that jumps out to me, we've talked about this plenty with Reese, is the walks. He's got 10 walks this month. That's more than he had all month last month. He's approaching the most he's had in the month. He's on base quite a bit, over .350 on base percentage. He got on base 4 different ways on Tuesday night. Getting him going, whether it's just getting on or hitting homers, both count, and I think he has done a very good job of getting that right for him. Next up, we talked briefly about Jake Bowers. I'm going to put this as a TBD, not quite a full check, just like a light check mark. I definitely put a check mark on Reese. Put a light check on Jake Bowers, keep him fresh, keep him involved. They haven't needed him in the outfield. He is clearly first base. He is clearly pinch hitter. He is clearly maybe a defensive replacement late in the game in the postseason if Reese Hoskins is playing first. Because I believe their best lineup setup is not using, let's say they're facing a righty, right? Is not using Jake as a DH. I could see a scenario where if a righty is starting against the Brewers in the postseason, I see a scenario where Jake's on the bench, Reese is at first, and maybe Garrett Mitchell is your designated hitter. Because then they bring in a leverage lefty to face Garrett. Boom, you counter with Gary or Eric Haas, for that matter. Kurt Hoge wrote an article about that today in a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So that's my thought of the optimum lineup against the righty. He obviously would not start against the lefty. So that's a half check for Bowers. Keep William going. Did he keep going? Now, he was on a ridiculous tear. He had 9 homers in the month of August. He had like 16 extra base hits. That was an insane level of production to continue, especially as a catcher. While it's a down step from that, it's on par with the rest of his season averages here in the month of September. So I'm definitely putting that as a check mark as how impressive he was here this month and what he's been doing. He's got 3 homers, which is a little bit of a slowdown for him. But furthermore, he's not catching every day. He's still hitting .261. His on-base is .373 this month. He's just had an incredible year, and I was kind of going through a hypothetical, you know, if I had a ballot for MVP and you get 10 votes, I think he's going to be a top 7 MVP this year. I really do. Just by war, just by what he's done production-wise. I mean, it's a great question. Who has more value, Elly De La Cruz or William Contreras? Elly on a bad team, William on a winning team, and playing everyday catcher. So I wonder how the voters are going to go on that. But they've definitely kept William going. Up next, we'll talk about the pitching side of these check marks and then lead us into the scenarios and the thoughts as well for the pitching rotation in the postseason. Brewers Weekly rolling on to the top of the hour right here in your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Rolling on with our checklist from about a month ago, I'm Dom Catronio. Brewers Weekly, Mets coming to town, 7:10 tomorrow night. 6:15 on Saturday, then 2:10 on Sunday. Everybody plays at the same time on Sunday. I kind of wondered if they were going to move that game up just to give the chance for the Mets to get out of town. Nope. Staying put. 2 o'clock. Anyway, back to the checklist here. Now the pitching side of this checklist. Let's start with the leverage versus the bridge bullpen. What did the Brewers figure out in this final month? And is there anything still left to be figured out? I wrote out a hypothetical here that for the wild card round, the Brewers only need 3 starters. And as of now, these guys will come up in a moment, my 3 starters for the wild card would be, not necessarily in this order, Freddy Peralta, Frankie Montas, and Aaron Civale. Those are the 3 traditional starters I would use. So that leaves, remember, you can have a maximum of 13 pitchers on the 26-man roster. You don't need to have all 13 pitchers. So I saw a scenario, though, you know what, just for kicks and giggles, let's put 13 pitchers on the roster because you can. And I think the Brewers are going to be okay with that. Maybe they'll do 12. But let's say, for the sake of this argument, let's dream for a minute and let's talk about 10 relievers being available to the Brewers in addition to those three starters. Here are my bridge guys. Colin Ray, DL Hall, and Joe Ross. Those are maybe the starter didn't go long. These guys can still get you outs. They can go multiple innings. They're not necessarily going to be throwing in the 7th, 8th, or 9th inning of a game. But they're still very important. The low leverage guys, I still want to see a little bit more from Nick Mears. I didn't dislike what I saw today. Of course, I disliked seeing a home run, but the velo was there. Once he gets more command of that slider, that can be interesting. And the worst case scenario is, okay, he's just left off the postseason roster. Then I just dreamed for a moment, like, you know, if you have 10 relievers, you have room with that 10th spot to be Jacob Mizorowski. He is staying fresh in Arizona right now. I wonder if we're going to see him at the ballpark tomorrow. Because what organizations will do for the postseason is they will bring prospects or players they think that are going to be involved in their program next year to just observe. They don't get announced. They don't get into the line, but they're in uniform in the dugout getting to watch this environment and rocking October baseball at American Family Field. So I wonder if we see Miz around this week as part of the taxi squad, because we already see Carlos Rodriguez part of the taxi squad right now. So that leads me to the leverage bullpen guys. Those will be Devin Williams, of course. Trevor McGill, of course. Aaron Ashby, of course. Yoel Piamps, of course. Jared Koenig. And Brian Hudson. Yeah, Brian Hudson's absolutely on my postseason roster. Has to be. And Pat Murphy hinted at that this week, that he doesn't have to pitch again in the big leagues this year. He's been a month down now in AAA. And their season's over, so he's in Arizona right now staying sharp again. I wonder if we see him in the ballpark this weekend. That, hey, he can stay sharp down there, work on his mechanics, and then we'll see him in October. I do think, and by the way, that's six names that you have in leverage of the 10 pitchers that I just named for your bullpen. Six of the 10 guys can pitch in leverage. Whew. Those are some riches right there. But the realistic one, again, 10 pitchers. I'm not putting Mizorowski on this. But realistically, I could see the postseason roster with 13 pitchers, the three starters being Freddie, Frankie, and Savali. Then the 10 pitchers being Devin Williams, Trevor McGill, Aaron Ashby, Yoel Piamps, Brian Hudson, Jared Koenig, Colin Ray, DL Hall, Joe Ross, and Nick Mears. I think that's a pretty darn good bullpen, if you ask me. And that's just for the first round. You can mix and match moving on, and I imagine Tobias Myers would be on a DS roster to be a starter, and most definitely on a CS roster when you need one more. Something to keep in mind. Because I think Tobias is going to have to start game 162 for the Brewers just to keep some innings fresh and not have to make a roster move in order to have him available. Other pitching questions, kind of answering one of them here with DL Hall. What are you going to do with DL? I think he's going to be a bridge guy. He can give you two innings if you need it. Maybe there's a string of lefties. Let's say you're facing the Diamondbacks, right? And they've got so many left-handed hitters on their team. I know they've got some talented right-handed hitters off their bench, and you don't want to have Ketel Marte hit from the right side. But to have DL Hall or Aaron Ashby or Brian Hudson, all three lefties that can go multiple innings, will be very important if they face a team like the Diamondbacks. So they figured out DL Hall's role. And then finally, this will lead us into the pitching segment next. All right, who are your starters? How are you going to roll with this? Are you going to do an opener? Are you going to do bullpen games? Are you going to use those three guys that I just mentioned traditionally? Whoa. Brewers suddenly have some hard decisions to make. Does Tobias have a role in the wild card round? Does Colin Ray? We'll talk about that coming up next. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. About halfway through the program. We're talking about pitching next on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. 30 minutes or so here on the show. We'll talk about the scenarios and everything that goes down with this doubleheader looming on Monday for the Braves and the Royals. Or not the Royals, sorry. Braves and Royals play this weekend. Braves and Mets. And could this series impact that series? What's going on with San Diego and Arizona and all that fun stuff? So here we're talking about, regardless of opponent, how the Brewers are going to roll with their starting rotation in the wild card series. It's been virtually confirmed that Freddie Peralta is going to throw game one on Tuesday. So there's no mystery involved with that. In fact, the media talked about it yesterday. with Freddie and that he knows he's going to get the ball on Tuesday. And that would be on that extra day of rest for him. But after the way Aaron Civale pitched today, six shutout frames against the Pirates, he's been pitching very well over the last month or so since coming here to the Brewers, a sub-3 ERA in that time. Do you put him in Game 2 now? And that would be on normal rest. That would be on the fifth day for a starter. Or do you put Frankie there with the extra day rest, and then you keep Civale ready as a just-in-case with potentially Tobias Myers? Now, if you keep both of those guys active on the roster, you take one less arm out of your bullpen. You can't change your roster unless there's an injury once the series has begun. And to me, I really like, if this series goes three games in a wild card series, I like the thought of having Tobias Myers ready to go in the wings. If he has to start game 162, have him ready to go for game one of a DS. Because the Brewers have something they haven't really had over the last few years, is options. I mean, like, you knew last year it was going to be Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta. Then we found out about Woodruff's shoulder right before the series began. And you're like, okay, if they go a third game, it's going to be a figure-it-out game. And the Brewers don't have that scenario right now, where they have multiple options to choose for a Game 3 and for a Game 1 of the DS. For me, Civale can give you length. He has enough tools in the belt that can use a third time through, at least maybe face that top. But again, I don't think any of these starters are going to need to see a lineup for a third time through against a playoff opponent. So let's look at these. Let's say it's the Braves, right? And these three guys that we're talking about, they're all right-handed. And Freddie's actually had some trouble with right-handed hitters this year, but here's what I'm leading with that. Let's say you're playing the Braves. Okay, their best hitters are right-handed. You've got Jorge Soler. You've got Marcelo Zuna. You've got Ozzie Albies, who's back. I know you're thinking, Dom, he's a switch hitter. No, he's only hitting right-handed right now because he's still experiencing wrist discomfort when he swings left-handed. So Ozzie will be hitting right-handed. And then you've got a couple of talented lefties like Matt Olson and Michael Harris. But those righties got some pop, so you got to think about that. I doubt Freddie would see Ozuna or Soler a third time through, or Albies a third time through. That's where you hand the ball to like a Yoel Piamps, your leverage righty that you have in maybe the fifth or the sixth inning. Then you give it to Ashby to give you multiple frames. Okay, well, let's say it's the Diamondbacks. Okay, well, top of their order is Corbin Carroll, who's a lefty. Then it's Ketel Marte, who you don't want to bat right-handed. You want him to bat left-handed. Still very talented hitter, nonetheless. And then you've got Christian Walker, or you've got Jock Peterson. The point is, there are a couple moves if you bring in a lefty to face the lefties at the top, Carroll and Peterson, that, okay, well, Ketel will hit from his better side. They're not going to pinch hit Corbin Carroll. They're going to pitch it with Randall Grichuk to come in off the bench like we saw him do the last two weekends. So again, you think about it, the Brewers have a counter for the Diamondbacks of what they want to do. Okay, well, what about the Mets? The Mets are extremely right-handed. We don't know Francisco Lindor's health status. He did not play on Tuesday against the Braves. He's a switch hitter, so he could bat from the left side against these righties. He's good on both sides of the plate. Then, aside from that, the only lefties are Brandon Nimmo, who's meh power, but he's got a serious bat-to-ball ability, and Jesse Winker. And there's going to be some boo birds out for Jesse, I know that. But I like the Brewers. I mean, their righties would be a couple of young players like Francisco Alvarez, who's hot right now, Mark Vientos, who's had one of the more underrated seasons in all of baseball, their third baseman. You've got Alonso to worry about. You've got Tyrone Taylor, old friend, who will probably be in the starting lineup for the Mets. We'll see him this weekend. And then you just have to sit here and think, okay, well, again, I can go to Piamps. Maybe they counter with a lefty off the bench. They don't really have much off the bench through the Mets. I sit here, I'm like, all right, well, I don't really lose an advantage the fact that I'm starting three righties. And if it's Freddie, if it's Frankie, if it's Aaron, in my order, personally, I would go Freddie game one, Savali game two, Montas game three. That's my order. I think the Brewers are going to flip those last two. Or they'll go with an opener and shock us all. But maybe if you asked me 2 weeks ago, I said they were going to definitely use an opener. Now I don't feel so certain. But I do know for certain there are not going to be many third-time through at-bats against the Brewers starters. I do think it's going to be Freddie, Frankie, Aaron. In that order, I would flip the last two. But nobody cares what I think. I'm just a guy talking about baseball. That's our quick look at the rotation. Up next, what the heck's going on with these standings? Let's try to make it make sense. The tiebreakers you need to know. And a quick peek at the American League, too. The Tigers, they won again today. Back with more after this on 620 WTMJ. Okay. Let's put our thinking caps on all together here. I'm Dom Petronio. Let's figure out what the heck is going on in the wild card race. As things stand right now, the Diamondbacks are in. They would be the third wild card team. The Mets are in. They would be the second wild card team, meaning they would be going to San Diego. That was clinched last night, by the way, or the not clinched last night, but virtually certain. The teams would need to run the table, meaning the Dodgers would have to lose out and the Padres would have to win out for the Padres to win the West. So they're about to get started, by the way, out in L.A. as the Dodgers and the Padres. So let's just assume for the scenario's sake, San Diego's the number one wild card team. However, the Diamondbacks host the Padres this weekend. That's going to be tough. That also has the season series on the line. You've got the Braves and the Mets caught in this loop where the Braves have openly said they're going to keep an eye on what's going on in Arizona before deciding what pitchers they throw this weekend against the Royals. We know Max Fried will go tomorrow. They are going to save Chris Sale for Saturday or Sunday, depending on what happens with the Diamondbacks. If they don't need to pitch him, they won't pitch him. Or if they are facing elimination and they need to win to stay alive, they will pitch Chris Sale and Ronaldo Lopez will be a wild card in all this. Then you got the Mets, who are, of course, playing here in Milwaukee. And then they go and meet each other, the Braves and the Mets do, on Monday for a doubleheader. Quick thing about that doubleheader. It is in Atlanta. It starts at 1 o'clock. If the way things shake out this weekend mean that they only need to play one game and the results won't be impacted at all, they will only play one game. Meaning, let's say for one scenario, the Mets lose their series here in Milwaukee. The Brewers take 2 out of 3. That would give the Mets 88 wins. And in that same scenario, let's say the Diamondbacks pull it off and win their series against the Padres. So that would give them 90 wins. And for the sake of all of this, let's say the Braves win their series, but not sweep, against the Royals. That would give them 88 wins, the same number as the Mets. So this scenario means the Diamondbacks are in. If they play game one of the doubleheader and the Braves win that game, that means they have won the season series. They have guaranteed the Mets can't get past 89 wins, which means they won't catch the Diamondbacks. But they cannot match the Braves because the Braves will have the tiebreaker. But they would still play that game, that second game, because the Braves have the tiebreaker on the Diamondbacks, which then determines, well, if Arizona and Atlanta end up tied, Atlanta would be the 2 seed, and Arizona would be coming here. That's just a taste of the chaos that we could be faced with on Monday, deciding if they're going to play both games, if the second game matters to both teams, to just one team, to the Diamondbacks, to all of this. The two ways that this can get wacky are if the Diamondbacks lose their series and the Braves win their series. It's less so of what happens with the Mets, because we know they have to play at least one game on Monday. We know that, unless the Braves get swept and the Mets sweep the Brewers somehow, which with respect, I don't think is happening. The reason why the sweeps would make things weird is because, well, Atlanta would be stuck at 86 wins. The Mets would be at 90 wins, and there'd be no reason to play that doubleheader, given the Mets have the tiebreaker on the Diamondbacks. So we'll keep an eye on what happens with that. I mean, it is literally going to change by the minute based on the games that are occurring, and we'll be staying up late watching Padres, Diamondbacks this weekend to try to make sense of it all. But the biggest things to remember, the Diamondbacks do not have a tiebreaker. Meaning, if Arizona ends up tied with either Atlanta or New York as the 2 and 3, right? If it's they have end up with the same number of wins after that doubleheader on Monday, Arizona is going to be the team ending up here because they lost their season series head-to-head. I know that doesn't make a lot of fans happy, but that's the truth. And that's what's scary about all this is that the Brewers, they don't really have a say in this. Because, sure, they can sweep the Mets, right? Let's say they sweep the Mets. The Mets are stuck at 87 wins. Even if the Braves win their series, they're at 88 wins. So they're only one game ahead of Atlanta. And let's say the Diamondbacks lose their series. They're stuck at 89 wins. So they still got to play that doubleheader. And if the Mets win both of those games, Arizona's coming here. It's just, none of it makes sense. I can't even tell you, okay, well, you got to root for this team, not this team. Because we just, the scenario is so odd where they could play both games, they could play one game. I think a lot of fans will root for any scenario that does not involve Arizona coming back here, referring to last year's team. But Pat Murphy has pleaded over and over and over again, like, hey, last year's Diamondbacks team is different than this year's team. This year's Brewers team is different than last year's team. I'm in charge. That's the gist of it. But I don't want to face Diamondbacks again. And then the some from the peanut gallery would like to say, well, you're going to play the Mets and they're hot. They're going to be pissed off. They're not going to know any better. They're just going to go play in a doubleheader and then come right back here to Milwaukee. They're going to be mad. Okay, cool. Play better. I just still think the Brewers are the more complete team than all three of these teams. Like, every team has flaws. I'm not saying the Brewers don't have flaws. But the Diamondbacks, their flaw is their bridge bullpen and maybe their starting rotation. Their offense covers up a lot of warts. The Mets' flaw is their bullpen and their bench depth. They don't have a lot of pinch hit capabilities, and the health of Francisco Lindor is kind of a dark cloud over them right now, but I don't really trust their bullpen right now. Now, Edwin Diaz was great in their final series against the Phillies last weekend. And then for the Braves, their starting lineup is a little bit different than what it's supposed to be, right? No Acuna, no Riley. Olsen has been hot in September, but he hasn't been himself all year. Murphy's been bad in September. Arcia has been bad. Kelnick's been meh. So it's not the same Braves offense that you're used to being scared of, but their bullpen and their starting pitching is sneaky good. I mean, the end of the game, Raisel Iglesias and Joe Jimenez and Pierce Johnson, those are some pretty good arms. And, of course, the Cy Young winner, soon to be Chris Sale. So there would be an imposing challenge for the Brewers. And I said this a few weeks ago, I'll say it again. Every team you face from here on out is a good team. Okay, it's not trying to say, like, oh, well, we'd rather face this team because they're bad. No. They're all good teams. They're all playoff caliber teams. That's what I love about the way things shook out here this year. Every team deserves it. And the fact that we have three teams for two spots race. Yeah, these teams have played well enough to be considered in the postseason. Real quick, American League side, then we'll take our last break. Detroit won again today. New York's about to clinch the East. They're three outs away from doing so. That would lock Baltimore in the number one wild card spot. They would be currently hosting Kansas City. Both Detroit and Kansas City won today. Oh, by the way, the Marlins are up 4-2 on the Twins. And if the Twins lose today, they would need to run the table to make it into the playoffs. They would need to run a table against the Orioles. Don't like those odds. Furthermore, Detroit, they finish with the White Sox. And shout out to the White Sox. They just swept the Angels to avoid having the 121st loss be at home. Now it's just going to be in Detroit instead. But they're still going to get that 121st loss to set the record. So shout out to the American League wild card. That's the last thing to decide, aside from here in the National League. But it should be a fun final weekend. Exactly what baseball meant when they wanted to expand these playoffs. Okay, One thing that baseball got wrong is the jersey that I'm wearing right now. I'm wearing the Oakland A's Kelly Green jersey, if you're watching on YouTube. Our final segment will be my ode to the Coliseum. I'm really kind of, I'm going to try to keep it together. I'm really still choked up about it. Brought tears to my eyes earlier today watching the last game from the Coliseum. That's how we're going to wrap up the show. So if you don't, no more Brewers talk from here forward. So if you don't care, if you're listening on the podcast or if you got something else, you can go ahead and cut it here. I do want to talk about the Oakland A's and what they mean to me, what they mean to my family, and what the Coliseum means to the rest of Major League Baseball. That's after the break on WTMJ. This text from Sam in New Berlin. I care what you think. Thank you, Sam. Not many people do. But I'm going to get on a soapbox here for these final 2.5 minutes or so. I want to play a really important clip that was from Mark Kotze earlier today as the Brewers played their final game at the Oakland Coliseum. 57 years later, they are done in Oakland. At the will of John Fisher and John Fisher alone to leave all of the history behind, to leave 48,000 fans behind. They didn't even open Mount Davis, mind you, and they sold the place out. And for the millionth time, this was never a fans issue. This was an ownership issue. And the thing that just irks me still to this day, the Brewers, while they wait, or not the Brewers, sorry, the A's, while they wait for Vegas to allegedly be built, mind you, no dirt has been moved, no renderings have been actually released. The ones you see, those aren't real. They also have not released a financing plan. John Fisher has always said, oh, I'm good for it, I'm good for it, I'm good for it. Plot twist, he's not. Furthermore, this was voted 30-0 by the owners to approve the A's to play temporarily in a triple-A stadium. This is the big leagues. And they're going to go to Sacramento. This is not a knock on Sacramento. It's a knock on the fact they're still going to the minor leagues. They have to put AstroTurf in. It's going to be 110 degrees in the summer in an outdoor venue with temporary seating, with a temporary clubhouse, with a temporary weight room, when all of that is permanently in Oakland. The team is being ripped from them without their love and without their history. The A's have just been incredible. And I said this in Oakland when the Brewers were there. And I'll play this clip from Mark Kotze, and this is how we'll sign off the show. The Brewers chant, or the A's chant, is the best chant in baseball because it's not let's go A's, it's let's go Oakland. So my thanks to you for listening, letting me get on this soapbox. Enjoy this moment from today at the Coliseum from Mark Kotze.
I want to thank you guys for coming out today to share this moment. With the club that I'm so proud of. We've played our asses off this year. We still got three left. I think we all should pay homage to this amazing stadium that we have had the privilege and pleasure of enjoying for 57 years. One more time to start the greatest year in baseball.
Let's go!